Hi, my name is Michael Creamer, and welcome to a podcast where I talk to industry experts about their property specialisms and what really matters to them. Today, we are digging much deeper into the world of working from anywhere, what we mean by organizational network analysis, and we're going to discuss how this impacts different cohorts of groups in different ways. In order to do this, I have with me Rachel Casanova, who's a Senior Managing Director at Workplace Innovation at Cushman & Wakefield, and Camilla Knight, co-founder of Eclat Culture.
I think to kick this off, I'm going to ask you, Rachel, to just give us a little bit of introduction to who you are and perhaps how you met Camilla.
Great, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. So my work is really bridging organizational culture and the built environment and how at different scales of individuals, teams, and organizations, we can responsibly do that. And even at the beginning of the pandemic, it was something I was interested in understanding of how will this impact each of those organizations, teams, and individuals, and would it be different? I had the opportunity to listen to a webinar that Camilla was actually facilitating. This was through Cornell University alum event, which we're both alumni of. And the book is called Flex by Jane Hune, which is about understanding the managing across differences. And there were some things that Camilla said that were just a no-brainer for me to reach out and for us to think together and sort of challenge each other on what are the issues when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion that she's seeing, and how does the built environment and the use of coming to an office or working from home have a positive, negative, or neutral effect on people. Camilla, is that a good spot to give an introduction to yourself?
Yes. Thank you, Rachel. And I'm so glad that you did reach out to me. I'm happy to be here as well and have this conversation with you both. Just to tell you all a little bit about me, I have a passion and purpose to be what I call a change superhero. The superhero part comes from my 8-year-old, but what that really means to me is I want to change the way that people interact with their environment, whether that's their physical environment or with other people. As a current D&I lead, I strive to attract, cultivate, and elevate diverse talent for the organization through targeted strategy and stakeholder management. In addition, D&I is more than just a job to me. It's life. I serve on several different boards in education and with regards to youth, with the goal of really driving awareness, support, and action around D&I in communities. I recently co-founded an LLC called Eclat Culture, offering coaching, consulting, and speaking engagements to different organizations that are seeking to build or restructure their D&I programs and initiatives. It's important to me to share the wealth of knowledge and experience that I've obtained in this space with others, which is all the more reason why I'm excited to have this conversation today.
Great. And I probably should have said at the beginning that Camilla is not a property expert, which is fantastic. So what we're going to be talking about is that sort of crossover between what's going on with people and different cultures and what that means in the workplace, and using some of the work that Rachel's been doing to talk about that. So we all know that much is being talked about at the moment about where we're going to work, whether that's back in an office, whether it's from home, whether it's from a third space or even a fourth space. There seems to be much less talked about how this affects different people in different ways, and whether that's something that we can or even need to approach when we're thinking about these different workspaces. And some of these are much deeper and much more difficult issues to discuss. So we're going to try and get into that right now and sort of unpack it a little bit. And I have to say, maybe to kick it off, I'm going to get Camilla to talk about the term DE&I. I'm from the UK, and in the UK, we talk a lot about diversity and inclusion. And when we were chatting pre the podcast, I had to stop and say, well, I haven't heard use of the term E in that expression before. So, which is my shame on me, I guess. But can we start there, Camilla? And can you explain what the equity part of DE&I means?
Absolutely. You know, and I want to be very frank and honest that I think that's something that companies or organizations in general are really just starting to lean into when it comes to that equity piece of the DE&I. But how I frame it up in my mind is really thinking about it this way. Diversity is really just making sure you have everybody there. You have all of these different groups there, whether it's around race, color, ethnicity, nationality, religion, socioeconomic status, and so many more things. And then the equity piece is really making sure that they actually have a seat at the table. They have equal access and treatment when it comes to things. But then where that inclusion piece comes in is making sure that they actually are included in the conversation and that their differences are highlighted and embraced in processes and activities.
Okay, and maybe we could sort of dig into that a little deeper. I've heard of various expressions. One is people are seen versus not seen in the office, or they're invited to the dance, but they don't get to dance. Can you maybe talk about what that means with this sort of backdrop of ethnicity?
Absolutely. So when you start to think about, you know, when in different organizations, some of the problems that they might be having, specifically, let's look at the race or even gender pieces. And gender, I think, is something that a lot more people can, you know, relate to or feel more comfortable with, if you will. So when you think about the fact that women at disproportionate rates have been paid less or promoted less, but now we're seeing it where companies are really starting to make sure that they're gender balanced at management levels and above. So that's where that equity and that inclusion piece comes into play. Women are now given an opportunity to have a seat at the table and have these senior leadership positions where, you know, their voices can be heard and are respected. The same thing applies when you start to look at race and looking at populations like Black or Latinx. And once again, looking at the disproportionate rates at which Black people are hired into companies and organizations and or are promoted. And even looking at, you know, the rate at which companies might be losing some of that diverse talent.
Okay. It seems to me that if we're going to figure out how to maybe design or organize ourselves in the workplace, where be that in a physical office or at home or wherever we're working from, there needs to be obviously an acknowledgement of this, which you're suggesting that is beginning to be, but it still disproportionately affects certain groups. If I switch the conversation to you, Rachel, from a property interior design thoughtful point of view, can you kind of dive into that a little bit, maybe talk about this organizational network analysis that you and I have been talking about?
Sure. And let me just first comment on what we were just really speaking about, which is a seat at the table and whether that's a literal one or a figurative one. My question, I somewhat have a hypothesis that we may not be doing as well as we'd like to be when we start to see people returning. So we've created inequality, what we're referring to as a digital equality right now, because we have these figurative seats and everyone is a box in a teleconference or a video conference that has some more equality, so more voices might be heard. The question is, when we start working from anywhere, when we see these hybrid models that are being talked about from a workplace perspective, then what happens? So then do voices who aren't in the room have the same equality, as Kamila was suggesting, as those in a room? And what happens, and what's the difference between the meeting that happens, but the minute before and the 5 minutes after, and do those conversations compromise people and who are not in the room? And if we overlay race and gender and other issues, does it start to affect different people differently? So if we go back to gender, and Kamila, maybe you can validate this a little bit, but if women perhaps who are historically hold more of those responsibilities for being a caregiver, if women are less likely to initially come back in this hybrid model, do they become a more compromised group? And you can put that into race as well. And so that's a real question. The world we're living in right now is maybe falsely equal. And I don't even know if it is equal, but certainly how we interact with work feels more equal. Now what happens?
I couldn't agree more with that, Rachel. You know, myself being a parent of an 8-year-old who is attempting to do virtual school right now, and then myself also being a student back at Cornell and being a full-time employee, it's quite hard to balance all of the things and to make sure that, you know, I am putting myself in a position where I can have certain conversations before or after the meeting and being involved in a different way. And I think that, you know, it definitely does play out to race as well, especially when you start to think of the difference in socioeconomic status that exists across a race and the different resources that can be available to someone based on their race or, you know, where they are in the community. Something as simple as, you know, having a computer for your child child or having a proper space and setup to be able to truly engage in your work.
So Rachel, if we, and one of the things you and I've talked about, or the three of us talked about, was this idea, which I really like. I think you used the term, you know, the difference between the organizational chart and who talks to who in an organization.
Yeah.
And then also this concept of people being included but not listened to. Can you go into that in a bit of detail and kind of pull it apart and try and tell us what is happening? What are you seeing happening?
Sure. So organizational network analysis is this name of this big thing. You might be able to relate to it from a social network analysis, as in how many friends do you have on Facebook? How many people are you connected to on LinkedIn, and pick any other social media. From the organizational network analysis, we're looking at the strength of relationships in organizations with the premise that organizations are based on trust. With trust comes more opportunity for conversation, for knowledge share, for opportunity. Organizational network analysis provides us the opportunity to map the strength of those, the strength, the size of those relationships. Dr. Karen Stevenson invented this over 20 years ago. She actually got her start in the military and was responsible for looking at the communication network of Al-Qaeda and looking at who's at the top of those relationships and how communication and information spreads. Since then, has spread this to the workplace. And in the last, 5 to 7 years, we've been able to mine the digital footprint that we all leave, the metadata. So not the message, but who are we communicating with? So the org chart, we all know, if you just read an org chart and thought that's how this organization works, you wouldn't get very far. It all happens with how do people really relate to each other? And what we're looking for is relationships that are mentorship relationships, obviously hierarchical ones, where we go for knowledge. Now, the way that that might be done is truly to ask people who they go to. But if nothing else, we can start to see some really complex diagrams that show how relationships form, where they're strong, these algorithms, which are beyond me. But it's not just that I email Kamila, but it's that Kamila then sends messages back to me and that we have a relationship. One-way communication isn't really an indicator of a relationship. And the relevance here is, if we believe that place matters, we talk about spontaneous collaboration. We talk about people coming together at the pantry, the water cooler, these opportunities for people to see what's on the periphery, not just attending a meeting that they're invited to. When that disappears, the question we have is, what happens to networks? Are we building new networks with people today? Because now we have opportunities to speak to anyone around the world and they could easily as be a town over as they are in another part of the country? Or are they shrinking? And is it happening in a consistent way? So if we knew that DE&I programs were looking to expand networks and those trusts and those relationships, how is not having the opportunity to come together impacting that? Now, Kamila and I had a side conversation. My hypothesis was that I was concerned this was going to be draining DE&I programs. And back to that equality of voice and access to having a voice. I think Kamila had some other interesting things that sort of pushed me to question that maybe this gives access to people. But if we don't use place like we are right now, my big question is, what is the impact that we're having?
And when you say what is the impact we're having, you mean the impact by working from multiple different places and not considering what you've just been talking about?
Yeah, what is the impact? I guess first the question is, does place really matter?
Right.
And if it does, what's happening now that people cannot congregate? They're not congregating for any of the reasons we believe people come to an office or travel to an office or travel to a client. So can we find evidence that we need to reinvest in programs and in opportunities to create those trust, that relationships, that people don't go back just to the people that they know? So if we do see a shrinking of the breadth of these relationships, I don't think it's far reaching to say that we're probably not reaching out to people who are more diverse in their thinking, in their race, in their gender, in their background, than when we had those opportunities to come together in place. Now, that might be oversimplifying it, but I almost have to, because I do what I do because I believe that coming together in a physical way does matter in this.
So Kamila, if I sort of push that along in a way that says, okay, we've got this extraordinary set of circumstances, COVID-19, that's going on at the moment, which everyone talks about as accelerating various trends and issues, and has made everyone within organizations think about their employees more, their health and safety, their well-being, who's talking to who. Do you think this is an opportunity for corporates to really think about the work environment in a different way that would be beneficial in a DE&I sense? And are you seeing that, or is that a hope that seems to be passing us by?
So, you know, I want to start by saying that I think that Rachel makes an extremely valid point. And I agree in several different ways. But I think what's important to call out, and, you know, I think it applies to the question you asked me, Michael, is I do think that it is a huge opportunity for companies to lean into this a different way. But to Rachel's point, it's going to have to be different. It's going to have to be a change from what perhaps they were doing before. So some examples of things is, you know, or actually the main example I would want to give is thinking about, for instance, in a normal corporate setting, when, you know, D&I events are being hosted or, you know, employees are being asked about different things, generally speaking, it's really curated and targeting the population that exists in the corporate office. And very often, you don't really have so much inclusion when it comes to the factories or the sales offices, especially if they work on different schedules, and or, you know, just because they really weren't a part of even building it out to begin with. But now what I've seen is that companies are able to showcase these different trainings because it's all virtual to everybody, whether it's because they joined live or because it was recorded, whereas it might not have been recorded previously. So now more people have access to it. In addition to that, some of the other things that I think is important for different companies and leaders to consider, and how do you create more of that equitable and inclusive space, especially when many of us are at home right now, is making sure that your employees have the necessary tools to do that. So whether that's, you know, having some sort of stipend set aside so that employees can buy home equipment to make sure that their home office is set up properly, or even allowing, you know, employees to come to the main office and maybe borrow certain furniture from the office since no one is there. I think some other things that I've seen work and that are important to consider is now more than ever is the time to listen to your employees. So whether that's doing surveys or creating certain councils of different employees across the organization to understand what are the different needs and what are the different things that are truly impacting people as we're all figuring this out, especially when we're home during COVID, especially when we see all of the things, you know, in this racially charged climate that we're in right now, especially in the U.S. But I think it's important that it's a culmination of things, and it's a necessary time for organizations and leaders to take a step back and really look at things with that out of the box way of thinking. It's not going to be what it was before. Now is a time for change.
So, Kamila, when we think about both of these points, that one is when people do come together, whether it's, you know, excuse me while I get that cup of coffee, or sitting next to someone that I didn't know and maybe I now know, and they are different from me in some way, something that I wouldn't have run into otherwise. So there's maybe a compromise there, but as you said, there's a benefit to more access. So my concern and question is, do trust and relationships get built when we have access to content, or is that not necessarily the next step to visibly seeing an organization work differently? Does that make sense?
I think it does. I'm going to try to answer it, and you tell me if I don't answer it properly. I think that, you know, it's important for organizations to create that space that you're talking about, to continue to build those relationships, because to your earlier point, I think it is difficult for people to continue to bridge, you know, certain relationships, especially not seeing people and having that opportunity to walk down the hall and say, hey, you want to grab a cup of coffee? So and, you know, therefore reverting back to previous relationships or people they know or people who might already be like them. So I think it's important for organizations to create that space, whether that's setting up informal mentorships or, you know, just a buddy system in general, especially for new employees coming in who don't have certain relationships built. But to your point, again, I think it is extremely difficult, but we do have an opportunity to try once again that out of the box way of thinking and be creative about this.
And Rachel, if I may, I mean, you're the real estate expert. What I'm hearing is there's this great opportunity to kind of rethink how we get people to interact and how we make the work environment, wherever that is, more equal, let's say. You know, I'm certainly seeing HR teams getting much more involved with the real estate teams when it comes to thinking about getting people back into the office or helping them work from home in the way that Camilla has been talking about with furniture and computer, laptops, screens, whatever. Do you see this emerging as something that clients are asking for more and more, that they're bringing together these, you know, let's say the HR teams, the DE&I teams, if they're separate, the real estate teams, to really kind of puzzle through what we could do better?
I'd like to say very much yes, but I still think it's bits and pieces. And as Camilla said, this is such a racially charged time that there's a lot of the words being used. And I think time is going to tell how far we're willing to invest. As we sort of came to this vulnerable table, this is hard stuff. This is, you know, we can more easily have this conversation around gender than we can around race, but that's probably not the right thing in general. So yes, I do think that the conversation is there. We need to make it riskier to not go do something about it than it is to go take this on and think about it. And many organizations were on a path prior to the pandemic to creating more active work environments where I came in not just to sit at a desk, but I came in and I had more choice of places to go work by myself to focus or with groups of people or to collaborate or ideate. I think the question now is, how do we include everyone when we're going to live in this hybrid world? More organizations will live in it than were before. So there were organizations already on this path and this journey, Unilever being one of them, that was, you know, creating great places for people to work any way that they needed to when they came to the office. The more that we see that, I think the importance is that we think of digital and physical connectivity with the same prioritization. So if I'm not there, that doesn't compromise me. And then I'm not sure I have the answer, but how we think about how people form relationships and what we can do, and if a screen suffices, or how we need to enable people to come in to build those mentorship relationships, to build those relationships with peers, and doing it differently. We're in such a unique time right now where really everyone is experiencing this the same way. And we will slowly get back to a pretty robust, the plurality of how people work.
Okay. But I guess if I sort of interpret what I heard, I don't get the feeling that things have changed much, if at all, in this area yet, from what you're seeing and sensing. I do think a lot of people are out there thinking about it, maybe. But I mean, if ever we have an opportunity to change for the better, it's now. And maybe, Camilla, I don't know what you see or feel around this.
Yeah, you know, that I think that goes back to what I was saying earlier, that this is a time for us to be creative as a people. And Rachel, you mentioned like we're all living this the same, but I would challenge it to say that, you know, I think we're all living this a lot different, actually. While we might be experiencing some of the things that are the same, I think that different people, especially depending upon, you know, things like we talked about earlier, your socioeconomic status, your race, where you might be located in the country, those things are all having a larger impact in different ways on some of us than others. And so with that being said, I think it goes back to the point of it's time for us to be creative. It's time for us to listen and engage employees to understand what it is that they need, to understand, you know, why or how this is impacting them and in a different way than it might be others. Because I don't think until we listen and really, you know, start to pay attention to those differences that we can actually start to move the needle forward.
right? And it's almost naive of me to use the words that I did. What I meant was our expectation for how we interact with work is all the same. But to your point, there are so many factors that are not equal in our ability to do that. So back to your point of listening, we have to understand why this is good for some, not good for others, not make assumptions that it is good for a department or a type of person, but really listen to understand those nuances. So like that's my incorrectly sort of representing it as I say that.
I think maybe we need to sort of wrap up. But I mean, what you said, Camila, and it resonates obviously with you, Rachel, is this, and maybe it's a question for both of you, but I think you're suggesting there's a lack of data, or rather you say we need to listen, which is obviously true, and we need to survey staff. I just worry that the surveys that have been pushed out by every company since the pandemic, if not before, probably don't address these issues. And, you know, I've talked about this with many people on different podcasts, the sort of need for data in our industry to underpin the decisions we make, so we make better informed decisions rather than, you know, based on anecdotal information, seems to be lacking. And it's probably lacking in the area of DE&I more than in any other area. Is that a fair comment?
I would agree. I think that you're absolutely right, that there are surveys that are out here that have even have come out during COVID or before. And, you know, while they might touch on some of the things that we're talking about when it comes to DE&I, I don't think that we're truly capturing it or truly engaging the subject in the capacity that we should be, especially when considering how things truly are, you know, impacting employees.
Cushman & Wakefield has an employee experience survey that we call Experience Per Square Foot. That legacy version came out in about 2016. We revamped that as people went home to Experience Per Square Foot at home. And now we're launching the next gen survey as companies and employees contemplate their coming back. The first two versions really did not include attributes about people's characteristics like gender and diversity. And in the next gen survey, we realized that it must. And to go back to Michael's point about HR and real estate coming together, those were questions that were always asked from a human resources perspective as they did pulse surveys, as they did experience surveys. And the exciting thing is that perhaps we are shifting to a new way of thinking, and that even on a survey that is focused on real estate and the workplace, these are recognized as important questions as we evaluate the success of the places we create.
I think maybe that's a good place to wrap it up, because it seems to me that we just got to get over that hurdle of saying we can't ask people difficult questions because we need the data to make sure that we then go and do the right thing. And I think I understand some of the sensitivities around that, but there must be a way. And it's back to you, Camila, saying we need to be creative and think differently and think out of the box. There must be a way that we can get data that tells us what we need to know to make change that we know needs changing, rather than kind of hide behind the, oh, we might offend someone, or we're not allowed to ask that question because it's data privacy. You know, we're full of excuses as to why we don't do it, but then we keep on compounding the error by potentially making the same mistakes. So I think maybe we'll leave it there. Camila and Rachel, it's a fascinating conversation. It's obviously very difficult, and it's a very complex set of issues that are going on. Hopefully some of this will get unraveled even more over the next few weeks and months, and we'll come out the other side of it with something that's better than before COVID, and using that as a sort of the catalyst of change. So thank you both very much, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.